Well, it's one thing to read about history, and it's quite another to live through it. And our guest this morning lived through history on this date, December 7th of 1941. Bill McEnany was in the Navy at Pearl Harbor at that time, and he joins us this morning here on KWOS Open Air, my good friend and neighbor, Bill McEnany. Chief, good morning. Welcome in. Good to
Aloha.
See you. Aloha to you.
As long as we're setting the stage.
Yeah. You have. You were what rank in 1941 on December 7th?
I was a petty officer second class.
Okay.
In the hospital corps.
And what ship were you on at that?
I was on the USS Solace, which was a 400-bed floating hospital. At that time, it had all the latest modalities that were available in the medical profession and a complete staff of doctors, nurses, and corpsmen.
So, not that anything is routine, I guess, on a hospital ship, but leading up to Pearl Harbor, what kind of patients would you get there? I mean, who would be in on the hospital ship?
Everybody on the fleet. They had everything from colds. One young man was aboard shortly after we got there, and had his appendix taken out. And shortly after, well, not shortly after, in March of 42, he came back aboard complaining of shortness of breath as he went up and down the ladders on his ship. He was on the Nevada at the time of the attack, and he got blown off. And as he was swimming ashore, he didn't know that he had been hit by a bullet, but we found the early part of March of 42, this young man came aboard ship, and as I say, he was complaining of a shortness of breath going up and down ladders. Took an x-ray of him. As a matter of fact, I was the x-ray technician at the time and took the x-ray, and we found that he had a bullet in his heart. As he was swimming ashore, he was strafed and hit, but he is swimming through burning water. He had no idea, and the bullet was practically spent at that time, or it would have gone all the way through him.
Wow.
And he was sent back to the States, the Naval Hospital in Mare Island. They took it out, and he died, I think, now about 4 years ago. There was quite an article in the Pearl Harbor Gram, which is the paper that they put out quarterly about the events that happened there.
December 7th of 1941.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us how your day started that day. You were off the ship that morning, weren't you?
Yeah.
What were you guys doing?
Well, we'd been there since October, and the word was out, as happens in the service, in the Navy especially, they had what called scuttlebutt. And that's nothing but rumors, but the rumor had it that we were leaving Pearl sometime in the near future, and there was no indication to us, anyhow, that the war was about to start. And five of us decided that we had seen nothing but the sailor haunts in Hawaii at the time, so we decided we'd contact a local cab outfit and rent a cab for the weekend, or for Sunday. And this young man met us at the dock at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I really did get up that early. We were doing a tour of the island, and at the time the attack started, we were on what they call the Pali Overlook, which is going from one side of the island to the other. Now it's a big tourist attraction. You can see the north side of the island, the windward side. And as we stood there, and our cab driver was explaining to us about King Kamehameha and how he treated his enemies by throwing them over the cliff there, we noticed that there were bomb bursts or shell bursts out over Kaneohe Naval Air Station at the time. And we couldn't figure out what in the heck they were doing, target practice on Sunday. You didn't do that. But then we saw an airplane falling out of the sky and figured, well, they're shooting drones. Well, they weren't shooting drones. And about that time, some guy drove up and wanted to know if the five of us were in the service. We were not in uniform at the time. We were in dungarees. And we, yeah, and he said, well, the Japanese just bombed Pearl Harbor and you're supposed to go back to your ships or stations. And we look at him like, are you some kind of nut, you know? And anyhow, he said, well, turn the radio on the cab and listen. So we did. And sure enough, they were broadcasting that they had attacked Pearl Harbor. So we got back in uniform, got back in the cab, drove to Pearl. We got there probably 8:45, something like that. And thousands of sailors milling around on the dock waiting to get back to their ships. And the Marine sentry who was on the pier at the time, he saw that five of us were hospital corpsmen. And he decided that we should get out there where we can do some good. You know, you guys are corpsmen. You're supposed to help these guys. So we jumped in a motor launch and we're heading out toward the activity.
With all of that bombing and strafing and everything.
That's when the second wave came over. So we were there. I mean, we were in the gut going out from the pier or the dock to Battleship Row when the second wave came over, which was just before 9 o'clock. And it was interesting. Very tense.
Can you describe that scene, what that was when you were going out there?
Well, as you know, water doesn't burn, but oil on top of it does. And the water was aflame. Guys had either jumped off their ships or got blown off due to the concussion and that sort of thing. And what we did in the boat that the five of us were in, we went around picking up the guys that were in the water. When we got a boatload, we went to Ford Island, which was a naval air station, and which the big graphic picture of the hangar being blown up and everybody running around, this is where we took these guys. While we were unloading, most of them were ambulatory, but some of them needed assistance. And while we were unloading these guys, the coxswain of the boat just backed off, and here we were stranded over on Ford Island and nowhere near my ship. So we proceeded to the infirmary, which had been hit, incidentally, by a bomb. The only thing that happened, a few windows got broken in the patio, and the lanai was where the thing hit, and this made a big hole, but no one was hurt. So for two more days, my friends and I, we just did what we could. We set up a first aid station at one of the hangars and just took care of guys.
You had no experience with combat type injuries until that time. You've been handling colds and broken legs.
Oh, right? No, and some, you know, the worst thing in those days, guys, motorcycles were a big thing, yeah. And we'd get a lot of motorcycle injuries. These guys would go flying around in their Harleys. And,
so it was a lot of burns, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, burn was the biggest
gunshot
thing. Yeah, burn. And there weren't that, actually, gunshot wounds, as I recall, the majority were burns, yes. And, didn't know what happened the 1st, 7th, and the 8th. We got back on the ship on the 9th, but my friends were still aboard. They were telling me about what they got, and yes, majority of it, it was burns. However, there were a lot of gunshot wounds also.
You just worked solid then for at least 2 days.
Oh, yeah, they did. All we did over on Ford Island was if guys would come ashore and they needed clean. It was cleaning them up mostly.
Yeah.
And but I think, you know, the hairiest thing to me was the night of the 7th when, 6 airplanes from the Enterprise flew in unannounced. And these guys came, it was after dark, probably about 8-9 o'clock at night, and they come buzzing in and they wanted to place the land. And to my knowledge, they did not give any recognition. They just came in, and they came in hot Well, that place lighted up like day, and five of the six airplanes were shot down.
Oh,
one
man.
Of them landed.
Our own guys.
Our own guys.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Doc, for our folks' generation and yourself, I still remember the stories of my parents on Pearl Harbor Day. My father was at the Citadel and left to enlist in the Army, and my mother was a reporter. For folks now, for our kids' generations, they remember where they were on 9/11 compared to how people remember from your generation where they were on Pearl Harbor Day.
Okay.
And that's just the mindset, the way it works with different generations, doesn't it?
Well, I think sad but true, not too long, well, it's been quite some time ago now, but when Congressman Skelton was still in office, he had a Marine, Bob Hunter, who was MODOT, it was the Air Force, and an Army person, and myself, and who had all been in World War II. Between Europe and Asia, the four of us, and we were to talk to the history class at JC High School. The four of us did our little dissertations, and the majority of the kids, sad but true, were not even aware of what had really happened that day, or because I asked just an out question about if anybody had heard of General MacArthur. And I got nothing but blank stares, and the same thing applied when I asked about Admiral Halsey. And they were the two big gunners during World War II, and there was no recognition whatsoever. And it's kind of sad that things like that happen.
It's sad. It's outrageous is what it is. It's not being instilled in kids. Maybe they hadn't had those classes yet, too.
I'm
sure
of that,
yeah. Who knows? Bill, you've been back to Pearl Harbor several times for reunions.
Right.
And have stood there at the Arizona Memorial, just a few hundred yards from where your ship was.
Right.
What do you think about when you go back there?
Well, I just stand and meditate more than anything and think how fortunate I am that I am still here. And that I did get through that nonsense, and I wrote out the rest of World War II in the Pacific Ocean. As a matter of fact, I went from one hospital ship to another, and I was in the South Pacific from October of 1941 until May of 1946 in one area or another. Two ships and one tour of duty in the Philippines. But, one thing that Linda and I always did, they had a sunrise service at the Punch Bowl, which is the big cemetery of the Pacific. And that was always a must for Linda and I, that they had the sunrise service at the Punch Bowl. And it was just eloquent. It was very, very good. And then early on, they used to have the sunset service at the Arizona. And that was kind of crowded because there weren't too many places at the time on the beach that you could really get into the thing.
December 7th, when that rolls around, do you do anything special on a day like that?
No. I mean, If nothing else, yes, I give thanks that I am here, yes, because it was the beginning of a new phase of my life, and that's for sure. One thing it did teach me was how dear that life was, because through the ensuing years, we picked casualties up. I mean, these guys were fresh. When we got their bodies, they were in bad shape. And to see these young men fight for their life, they were hurt. I mean, really hurt. And how precious that life was to them, and they tried to hold on to it as best they could. And I will say this for the ships that I was on, if we got these guys, if you'll pardon the expression, fresh, our mortality rate was very, very small because we had an excellent group of doctors. And these guys, they turned to, and depending on where we picked them up and where we took them to, which was usually a three-day run, these guys did not stop working for 3 days in a row.
You were fixing up guys virtually after every major battle in the South Pacific. You were everywhere, weren't
you? Yeah, right, yeah.
You wanted to, Bill, you wanted to take a little extra time. You asked us to give you a little time here toward the end of the hour to talk about Operation Guardian Angel.
Yes. One thing I would like to say from the bottom of my heart is thank you for everyone that participated in that. You can't imagine what it means to these young men that are at sea or deployed or whatever you want to call it. There, communication is a lot better today than it was when I was at sea, but just to have things come from home, and especially as it is today from people that we don't even know, it is really gratifying. And I want to thank everyone that did participate in it from the bottom of my heart. It means a great deal.
How long were you in the Navy?
20 years.
20 years, then you retired.
Well, yeah.
From the Navy and had an entirely different career after that.
Yes.
Within the medical industry, though.
Oh, yeah. I went into the medical sales of X-ray equipment. I learned the X-ray business while I was in the service, and it served me well when I got out, yes.
I've talked to combat veterans before in the past, and they always talk about how life in combat in those years when you were in that situation. Is life ever the same after that? I mean, with the intensity, though, you know what I mean?
Well,
guys always talk about, wow, I really felt alive during that time. I mean, just everything was so intense.
Well, I don't know whether I was alive or not. I know I was working my can off. I was never shot at. If you're standing there, and a lot of my friends in the Marine Corps and some that I have coffee with several times a week, most of them have Purple Hearts, and they're of the much younger generation or out of Vietnam. But they tell some stories, and it's amazing. They're not that gory. And if they did get hit, they felt it after it happened, not while it was happening. And they always found a little levity somewhat in the thing that was going on. Maybe they're bananas or bonkers or whatever, but I found personally when we were loading up on all these guys that we were getting, if you got involved in the way that they felt, you were going to wind up feeling like they did and you wouldn't get over it. So I don't know whether dispassionate is the right word or not, but you had to sort of put it out of your mind.
I think professional is probably the word there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Professional. Thank you.
Bill, 20 years in the Navy, how many times were you a shellback across the equator? Just once.
Well, after that.
Once you're always. Once always, right?
Let's see. We crossed the equator. I got indoctrinated on my first one in 1942. And that was a thrill.
That's another show, right?
Yeah. Oh, man, that was a thrill.
He'll talk to us about Neptune's realm the next time.
Oh, God, yeah. And you talk about something that's demeaning. They talk about this hazing in fraternities and all the rest of these places. You ain't never lived until you've crossed the equator the first time. And then you get to do it after that. Yeah.
I'm going to buy you a beer one of these days. You're going to tell me that story, all right?
All right. It's in here.
It's in the book.
It's in the book.
Bill McEnany joining us this morning to talk about his experiences before, during, and after this date in 1941, 71 years ago, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Bill, always good seeing you, my friend. We will see you soon. Thanks for coming in.
I hope so, yes.
All right, man.